Possession crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road, and that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. He hits it. Wow. It's over the bar.
Hello, welcome to the RTEGA podcast. The championship is well and truly up and running now. We have games in the rearview mirror and games to look forward to, football and hurling, obviously. So we're going to start with hurling this week, which is why Mr. Jackie Tyrrell is with us, along with Rory O'Neill, as always, and Damian Lawler. How are we all doing, lads?
Good, Mikey. Mikey.
How are you?
Very well, thank you. And I'll get the housekeeping out of the way now. Damien, of course, is the host of our newest GA radio show on RT Radio 1 on a Friday evening called The Championship, which is also going to be available on this podcast channel, which is the main reason I'm mentioning it, really, is purely selfish. So make sure you listen to that now as well. Okay, there's only one place to start here. Jackie brought it up before we even started recording. Ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't yet seen James Duggan's point for the Laois under-20s against Westmeath last night, please go and have a look at it. It's gone viral for a very good reason. I'll give a brief description. James Duggan, who scored 3-5 in the game, corner forward, seems to be a huge talent, cut in off the right wing, took a shot off his left, hit it wide, looked very upset with himself, then pulled up with a cramp or a hamstring injury of some sort, was on one leg hopping, looking incapacitated as the Westmeath goalkeeper went for a short puck out towards the 65. Next thing, Duggan, Lazarus-like, leaps through the air, Superman style, catches the ball, lands on his knees, doesn't bother standing up because his hammer's gone, and from his knees puts the ball over from about 30 yards. After a few talents, this is going to be from 70 yards, but it's about 30 yards. Jackie, I don't think I've seen anything quite like it.
No, it's kind of a combination of a drunk lad at about 3 o'clock in the morning wandering the streets, combined with Brian Corcoran's point blank continue when he was on his knees. I think that's kind of the best description of it. But I think he fooled the goalie because the goalie was taking a sharp puck out and he looked so
incapacitated.
And Jack's really looking like fall down in a heap. And next thing, all of a sudden, this Superman like dive snatches out of nowhere and on his knees like Brian Corcoran and puts it over the bar and then heels over in the cramp. He still had the cramp and he was sitting over the bar. So it's just, and we're not even doing it justice. It was just, I'm going to put it as a really early strong contender for score of the year. I think it'll take something super to beat this. I don't think it will be beaten because it's just, it has everything. It has an injury in it. It has a dive in it. It has a score from your knees. I mean, what more can you say about it? Yeah.
Well, Greystone's Air Ogre playing Ockram in the Wicklow Junior League tonight, so I'll attempt something similar, Jackie, if I get on the pitch. And I'm sure now you're in a full forward now. You're going to try this, aren't you? You're going to feign injury, you know, hope the keeper goes short. Are keepers allowed to go short in Kilkenny League and Championship?
You're allowed one and a half in that.
Damien, the scoreline, I know it went to extra time. The scoreline of 4:33 to 4:27 in a match between Laois and Westmeath, who making great strides at underage, but not seen as like the aristocrats of hurling. That scoreline isn't going to do much to quell the disquiet among some about the way the game is going.
Yeah, changed the slitter, lengthened the hurley, put more weight on it. But in fairness to Duggan, I'd say Westmeath are sick of him. He got a cracker of a goal about 2 years ago in the minor against them as well. An unbelievable goal. So anybody who takes a look at his point last night, take a look at that against the same opposition. Now, they absolutely hammered Westmeath on that occasion. So it's been some turnaround by Westmeath to get back up to that level again. But Jackie will know too, like the Satanta and Cú Chulainn programmes that Pat Critchley and Cheddar was involved in about maybe 10 years ago at Laois have produced an unbelievable amount of hurlers. I suppose you got Cheddar's first team, the mainstay of that, Reid Senior. But they started competing under 12, under 14 in A competitions, and they started having maybe 3 or 4 different teams at inter-county levels for every level. So a lot of work went into that. My fear though, is all along, no matter what format you put into hurling, you have your strongholds, and then you have your Antrim, Laois, Westmeath, and Carlow that might pop up and down. So, you know, when Laois had that unbelievable win against Dublin a couple of years ago, Eddie Brennan was in charge. He built on the good work. That's in my opinion, when the powers that be really need to step in, need to put more resources in, increase the amount of coaches in the schools, try and increase the amount of GDAs in the county, try and breed more life into hurling, And even you have a parentage rule in football if you're in Division 4, the lower tiers, whereby three players can join a county even more with a parentage rule. Anything to try and keep the likes of Laois propped up there, because the pick is so few in hurling that you need it. And it's great to see these victories coming through, like Kildare beat Carlow by a point last night. And I know from living here in Ace, the work that's going into hurling in this county is unbelievable. Herity Jackie is in charge of the senior team, but he'd probably tell you, Jackie, if you're talking to him, and he's doing a right good job. But if you look down through the tiers, it's unbelievable the organisation that's there. And Ace are pumping about 11 or 12 hurlers to every county team as well. So look, the future is bright for emerging counties, but they need a huge help as well.
Yeah, they certainly do. It was heartening, Rory, to see those results last night, because it doesn't leap off the page to everybody, but the Leinster Under 20 Championship has been it was pretty much a one horse race for a while, and then Wexford came back strong in the last decade, and obviously Dublin through the Gaelscoils and stuff have really developed at underage level. Now I'm not sure we're quite at the level where Laois, Westmead, and Kildare are going to be challenging those three for provincial titles, but the moment, you know, it seems to be, the progression is going in the right way, and that's all you can ask for.
Yeah, and the important thing is to try and get these teams up to becoming competitive. The reality is the, like, it's 1981 since a new team won the All-Ireland for the very first time, which is Offaly, I think, and probably not going to happen anytime soon. But you don't necessarily need to be winning All-Irelands to achieve progress. I think the big thing is if you can get Laois, Westmead, Antrim, Carlow, and Kildare maybe are possibly in that next tranche, to get them up to a level where they can just be competitive and maybe stay in the Liam McCarthy for a couple of years. And I think Jackie made mention on the Sunday game on Sunday night, and I think it's a really important point and it shouldn't be lost on anybody. Laois versus Antrim now is a massive game, isn't it? Would you think?
Well, it's huge. It's huge. Yeah. Like, the progress that both have made, if they lose and go back down again, it just kills.
It just knocks the stuffing out of them, doesn't it, Jackie? Like,
you have a small window. Look what Carlow did a couple of years ago. The Carlow Rising did some great results. But that's kind of, you know, they've been punched drunk now and they've gone back and they struggled to beat Kildare the weekend, more so because Kildare are coming on as well. So when a team has a kind of a key moment, when they have a big result, when things are going well in momentum, as Damien said, that's the time to come in, row in behind them, support them financially with coaches and things like that, because otherwise they'll fall away. I mean, if we need to, as Damien said, we need to bring every county up and get them as competitive as possible. And I
think Mead as well, Jackie. Mead are putting in a huge amount of work as well.
My own brother is coaching up in Kildare with Clane as well. He said there's huge work, the numbers up there, the appetite, the enthusiasm is there, and it just needs to be harnessed and all pointing in the one way.
Yeah. Something else to hearten, Damien. Well, it can seem a little bit like crumbs from the table when you see the scenes in Wembley last night, and Budapest blew my mind, and they were just looking, and Bucharest was looking at the stadium in Bucharest, and Jesus, that's a beautiful stadium in Romania. I didn't even know it was there. What I'm talking about, obviously, is crowds. Great news that we're getting 8,000 into Croke Park, and there's going to be the test events in Connacht and in Munster as well, 2,400 in Munster, 2,049. But I suppose the bigger news is that we're going from 200 to 500 from Saturday for stadia over 5,000, which is basically every intercounty ground. This, Damien, you broke the story this morning. This is off the back of a fair amount of lobbying from the GAA, and am I right in saying more so from county boards and provincial level than central?
You're certainly not wrong, Mikey. A huge amount of lobbying at a county board level and a huge amount of lobbying at provincial council level as well. I think individual county chairmen, chair people were on the case yesterday as well. Like, it's not, as you say, Mikey, it's crumbs. Like, but at the same time, it's crumbs coming in the right direction rather than the other way. You might say, what's the big deal? This wasn't kicking in until Monday. It's just 200, it's just an extra 300 people. But that will look after a lot of families now. A lot of look after players' families, county board officials, clubs, and you might get maybe an odd ticker or two for the supporters' club. So suddenly it breathes a bit more life into it. I think the test events initially, Camogie and ladies football, they were included in the test events. And like, the attendances weren't massive there, the numbers weren't massive. So what was learned? I'm not so sure a huge amount. So I think possibly that's why we were seeing the 8,000 in Croker on Saturday. What can they learn? And I do believe that as we speak, they're looking to add another test event, possibly this weekend as well, Mikey, which would be great. And it may involve a high-profile fixture too, so have to wait and see on that one. But I think a lot of lobbying took place in the past 2 days. Minister Chambers was very favourably disposed to having the 8,000 in Croker on Saturday, and he did listen. Like, there were 20 inter-county games on this weekend across all the levels, from Racker to McDonough to Ring to the Lee McCarthy to Sam Maguire. And they're all of importance to each county. And that extra 300 now, while it's not coming in for Friday night for League of Ireland supporters, which is a shame, it will be there from Saturday. And you can cater for players, families, clubs, officials, and maybe even a few from the supporters club as well. And, you know, I suppose it's a small comfort, but at least it's a comfort.
Yeah, Jackie, obviously you spoke on this on the Sunday game at the weekend and feel quite strongly about it. I think a lot of people do. And I don't know whether, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but for me at least, the Euros has been a huge factor because we're seeing this all over Europe. We know that England-Germany game yesterday should have been in the Aviva Stadium, and there's 40,000 people in London. Different countries are different stages of vaccination programs, etc. But, and I don't want to get into a debate about public health, but it is so frustrating for sports fans to in this country. And now we think that, you know, 500 is seen as like a good news story when there was 40,000 in Wembley yesterday.
Yeah, look, there's obviously different hospital capacities in different countries, but I think we're all looking on at envy at massive big stadiums full of people and the atmosphere that it generates. And I think that has generated the pressure on the government and put the skids probably under the GAA to get after them a bit. And it is positive to see them coming on, but I do think there's a huge element of tokenism in the 200 to 500s.
Yeah.
I think that could be so much more. Like, I haven't seen anything yet of the Clare Tipperary game the weekend. Is that 500? Why isn't that at 4,000 or 5,000? I think I know it should be more than that. We're very, very slow to move on it. It's great that Damien alluded to that. You will be able to cater for the family and friends and all that. But 200 to 500, yeah. Like, you know, that should be 200 to 5,000 at least, and get some element as well. And it's very interesting. I was thinking of the effect of it. What would it have had? I don't believe that Clare would have hit as many wides if there was 5,000 in there. I believe the Clare supporters would have been mourning that you'd be hearing. I think it would have actually transpired onto the field, and that effect the players would have felt. And I just don't think they probably would have taken some of the shots because they would have hearing the frustrations from the crowd. So that's the impact it potentially can have. So I do accept that it's a step in the right direction, but, you know, it's a small step. We could be taking a lot bigger steps because, like, our stadiums are huge, 30, 40, 50,000, and we could easily comfortably fit in 5, 10,000 and still adhere to all the guidance and the guidelines from NPHET and the government.
And just one point on that, Mikey, just one small one, just before we finish up on that. I think hurling more so than any other sport, certainly from what I've seen. Look, I'm lucky enough in that I'm at a lot of these venues and I'm in these grounds. And sometimes when the game is on, I'll just take a quick sneak in and just go in and just kind of get a sense of it. And hurling more than any other sport, I think, feeds off the oxygen that and the buzz that a crowd creates, whether that's mistakes, whether that's momentum, whether that's, you know, teams building up a sort of a climax in their play, getting on a bit of a run. I think if, for instance, had Watford had a big Watford support in there on Sunday when they got a bit of a burst with 10 or 15 minutes to go, who's to know that just the crowd coming in behind them might have lifted them an extra couple of octaves and pushed them on. I think hurling suffers more than any other sport for that, because when you're in there and when you actually see it and when you feel it, I don't care what people say, whether it's Munster Hurling Championship or All-Ireland semi-finals or finals, there's still a training ground feel to the games. Would that be fair, Jackie? I mean,
and you can hear the echo of all being cleared. And actually, one good thing, and like you, Rory, I was lucky to be in some of the games. I could actually hear the discussion of the water breaks, particularly the Munster final last year, were only about 30 or 40 yards. You could hear what Austin Gleeson was saying. You could hear what Mikey Beavens was saying. So it's that quiet. Now the subs trying to generate a bit of an atmosphere, but
it's not
the same. And the echo then of the big stadium as well. You know, at times you can hear a pin drop in there.
Yeah, the Damien, I suppose the counter argument is that for hospitality industry and large parts of the economy, yesterday was a dark day with more uncertainty. So should sporting organisations like the GAA be happy with what they get and know that they're heading in the right direction, and it's better than no championship, which we might have thought was going to be the case back in February or March.
I'll be totally honest with you. I think that with the training breaches that were in the GEA high profile ones maybe a few months ago, I think that was a huge blow for everybody who had been lobbying on behalf of the GEA. Massive blow. And I think they went away from the negotiating table from that for a while, because just high profile teams involved. So I think that was a cause a huge concern to the GEA. It'll be happy. They've been really, in tandem with public health advice all the way along, and they haven't been seen fit to lobby even harder. They're just accepting the phases that are going to come. There's huge positivity in the air, but as Jackie said, like, you could easily have a few thousand into the big games this weekend, and Rory's right too. Like, the hurling landscape would change completely with a crowd in. There are times when I'm on the sideline, I'm pleading that Rory might come down to me because of what you said. You can actually hear. From a reporter's point of view, you can actually hear all the tactics and it's like, okay, to be fair, you're not going to invade somebody's privacy either. You know, if certain information is sensitive, you won't get it out there. But from a viewer's point of view, if it's interesting and it's tactical and insightful, you can hear everything that's been said. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's very, very hard to do that with a packed arena, but I just have one earpiece off and one earpiece on. So I'm listening to my gaffers, and I'm listening to the team's gaffers as well. So
If you were listening in Nolan Park now on at the weekend, Jackie, you would have probably heard Rossiter or one of Davy Fitz's lieutenants screaming, go for goal, because that's basically what Wexford did. And they're coming up against Kilkenny this weekend, and they weren't doing that to embarrass or to demoralise Laois. They were thinking ahead to Kilkenny, so obviously they're thinking, we might outpoint Kilkenny, but we finally realised that we have some players in our forward division who are pretty handy close to goal, and maybe we should try giving the ball there.
Yeah, it was a big confidence booster for them. They racked up a huge score, 5-31. We didn't learn a huge amount from Wexford other than they're going to continue with the way they play, and that Kevin Foley will sit deep. They'll run the ball up as much as possibly they can. I suppose the return to form of Conor McDonald is a huge plus. Rory O'Connor has brought his game to another level this year. 1-7 the weekend. Lee Chin has been Lee Chin. He always turns up for them. So they have some real options up front, and they will be crucial, those three guys in particular in the forward line, to get the scores. Because more than likely Kilkenny will have an extra defender back there as well. And it was evident. You could see that they were purposely going for goals near the end. This was probably a nice little set-up one for Wexford to team into Kilkenny now. And I suppose all the talk will be of Wexford this week, the big score they put up, and not a whole lot about Kilkenny. They're very much quiet down there. You know, Adrian Mullen is carrying a bit of a hamstring, so we just have to wait and see if he's back. I expect TJ to be full forward and probably maybe go with a long ball option at times, and try to take Kevin Foley out of it, because we know TJ is so good in the air. They've had a decent league. They've unearthed Dara Corcoran, a wing back who's been really good. James Berrigan has had a good league as well. But Owen Cody, a lot will rest with Owen Cody this year. Colin Finlay is gone. So Adrian Mullen and Owen Cody really have to provide the support and cast for TJ to get the scores, to be the outlet. And Owen Cody can be that guy. So I think Kilkenny will be going in under the radar, and I think they will be confident of having a real go off Wexford and turning them over.
Kilkenny going under the radar. Who said that with a straight face?
Well, I actually, Damien, I think
that's
Jackie
true.
Has
that
a
is
point.
True. That is true. That is true.
Yeah, I don't think you're. Yeah, I would accuse you of cute horrors at half an opportunity, Jackie. But here, I don't think it's the case, Damien. There has been no talk about Kilkenny. They topped their league group. They couldn't do a whole lot more. They beat Wexford, who've been their bogey team of late. And yet, if anybody mentions them, it's just that Asher Jesus, TJ, and 14 others.
Yeah, like that is there. Like, and players like John Donnelly have come in and put in workmanlike shifts. And Jackie will know better than I will, but maybe named on the wing, but would drop back and would do all the donkey work, maybe in front of the halfback line and further beyond as well. He'd be a pure Brian Cody player. But in terms of the all-out scorers that are there, you are looking to Owen Cody. And like Owen Cody, well, I won't do a Michael Richards on it and say he burst on the scene, but we were waiting for him to come for quite a while. And he had a bad luck of missing a high-profile game on the morning of a two. Injury as well would have been a a contender. But like, you know, last year with the young hurler coming through, shining through, I just felt that he's starting to find his way now a little bit, and maybe he can offer a bit of support to TJ too. Just with the possession game as well, like they, you know, Limerick and Galway probably are favourites in most people's eyes at this stage. Cork have been goal machines early in the league, but it'll be interesting to see how they turn out. Tipperary are kind of very much tried and trusted at this stage. So yeah, I think Kilkenny maybe will be coming in around there, certainly under the Limerick Galway kind of mantle. And I suppose Jackie will know more than I will, but just it's they've come late to the new style of hurling, but they are capable of mixing it up. But they haven't done so with any great like extravagance so far. So that's probably why they are coming in under the radar. We're not quite sure what way will they go, or will it be a hybrid of both styles.
Who's the man who'll drop back, Jackie?
Okay, Kenny, look, I'd imagine it will be one of maybe Killian Buckley or Pádraig Welsh, or maybe they might just free up Paddy Deegan. It'll be one of those three, but I expect maybe Pádraig Welsh or Paddy Deegan to play that role. Very good on the ball, well able to get forward, well able to pick a point. But to Damien's point, you know, Kilkenny will, they will lean heavily on the long ball when they can. That's the game they want to play. But, you know, if Wexford are packing the defence and they're not getting much change out going long, they will go short. They will put it through the line, so we'll try run the ball. But when there's an opportunity, and particularly if they push TJ in full forward, they will go early and long on him and test out Liam Ryan and that Wexford defence. And maybe even TJ might drift to the corner, because I know the Wexford cornerback, Simon Dunhill, and the Reck brothers might be the tallest, so they could look at that option as well. But look, they have that variety, and it's something that they have been working on the last couple of years. At times, they don't look totally comfortable with working out through the lines, but I'm sure Brian will have worked it, because that is the way forward. You need to have that in your armoury. If you're going to win an All-Ireland, if you're going to go deep in the championship, you have to be able to play the ball short. You have to be able to create space, because what that does is it'll pull the opposition's defence and their extra man out if they have the shooters around the middle of the field, and then you're able to go along and create space inside. So look, it'll be a hybrid of both, that Damien has said, but more leaning heavy on the long ball.
Yeah,
as I say, Jackie, you say Owen Murphy, sorry lads, I say Owen Murphy would fancy, you know, the possession game a lot, Jackie, if he had a full shot at it. That's just my guess.
Yeah, well, like, look, it's going to be in Croke Park, so the pitch is quite large. But if Wexford draw back their full forward line out, which they probably will, he'll have no problem giving it to Hugh Lawler. Hugh Lawler giving it to him before he knows he's on the 21, and he'd be quite comfortable hitting it long and probably hitting it in around the 21 if TJ is there. So that option is there, and you take Kevin Foley out. And what that does is probably bring Kevin Foley back, which might suit Kilkenny a bit more space around the middle third.
Yeah.
Yeah. You wouldn't fear for Kilkenny's ability to do that part of it, Jackie. Rory, it's more the playing through the lines part. And actually, Lee Chin said it last week. He basically said what we've all been thinking. Why have Wexford, you know, their form fallen off a cliff since 2019? He kind of said, if the way we play, if we're not fully on it, if things like, if everybody isn't fully focused or on form or their touch isn't right, the whole thing falls asunder because of the timing involved, the runs, the awareness of teammates. So for a team like Kilkenny to say, you know, we'll have to do one and have to do the other, that's tricky, because playing through the lines, as we've seen from any team who's been successful at it, it kind of requires a commitment to it, doesn't it?
It requires a commitment from a Kilkenny perspective, if that's, you know, but I think the big difference when you're facing into Wexford is, and I think the big problem that Wexford has, and I think, as you said, Lee Chin made reference to it, have they been rumbled to a certain extent? Are they a little bit one-dimensional in that most teams now know what it is they're going to get from Wexford when they go out and play them? I think if you look, I mean, people, the famous saying, Kilkenny don't do tactics. I can guarantee Brian Cody and his backroom team will be having a very, very good look at the game from last Saturday involving Leash, and will have a very good idea how Wexford are going to approach this. So I don't think there's going to be any surprises, and I think that's half of Wexford's problem. They're maybe just a little bit too predictable now. And I think from Kilkenny's perspective, I think Kilkenny will probably play it quite similar actually to Cork later on that evening. They'll mix it up. They'll go long when they need to. They'll go short when they need to. They've got probably, they'll always have 1 to 15 lads who are capable of hurling quite well. And Croke Park, I think, will suit them. Having said that, you know, as Jackie said, it's quite a big open field, you know, like, so fitness will probably play a key part. And obviously, depending on conditioning, it's going to be warm. Well, the weather forecast is for poor and it's for rain, which might obviously slow things down. So yeah, look, I think it's a very intriguing game. Is it a hard one to call? I don't know. I'd still fancy Kilkenny strongly, just given the way Wexford's form has petered out in championship hurling over the course of the last 12, 18 months. But I don't think Wexford are going into this game without any hope.
Okay, let's call it. Rory's called it. I'm obviously going to go for Wexford because I have to, and I've got joy in my heart at seeing Conor McDonald and Rory O'Connor being properly used, and I think that can go a long way to them winning. Jackie, are we taking for granted you're going for Kilkenny?
Yeah, I am, because I think Rory makes a really good point. Wexford became a little bit predictable last year with the running game. You've seen getting Galway and Clare. They just put a wall across the middle third. They just wouldn't let them penetrate it. And then they hadn't really an option. They hadn't a long ball option inside. Now, unless they've worked on that, maybe to a Lee Chin or a Conor McDonald, because they'll need an outlet inside, because Kilkenny will definitely have their homework done on that running game.
Do they get enough out of Conor McDonald, Jackie?
They haven't the last while, but you would have to be heartened by his performance. He looked sharp, he looked lean, he looked hungry again, Leash. Look, with all respect to Leash, I know it was only Leash, which can only go what's in front of you. He hasn't done that in a while. He hasn't put up a score like 2-4 in a long, long while. So, you know, from a Wexford point of view, you'd have to be heartened by that. But he's going to be up again probably Hugh Lawler the weekend, and we'll get a really good test off that. So
really good test.
They'll need him firing on all cylinders with Rory O'Connor and Lee Chin, who are an awful lot more consistent. So that could be a crucial battle, but I'm going to give it to Kilkenny to win a real war of attrition.
Oh, I can't believe you're doing it to me, Jackie. Damien, are you going to break my heart here? Or are you going to give it to Kilkenny?
I think I am. There are times I've seen Conor McDonald play that role, events role, running out to the corner flags. It reminded me of, this is before they refined the system, it reminded me of Tommy Kine when he played soccer for Ireland, just a runner out to the corners the whole time, and he was half knackered half the time. But then they refined the system, and I keep going back to the Wexford-Tipperary game. Mikey, that's a huge turning point for me, because Wexford had tip on the ropes that day. So if they play like that against Kilkenny, if they actually go, okay, the running game can be predictable, but if they're coming at you from all angles and they're fit and they're sharp and they're energetic and they can maintain that and they've got a few players from the bench, well, then they could have the legs on Kilkenny and they could stretch them. But I just feel Kilkenny have had a really, really good league. They're under the radar again. He's got a very workmanlike team there. And I just feel, I think Kilkenny will sniff it.
Okay. Briefly, the other game in Leinster, Jackie, not to do them a disservice, Dublin, they got over a game that some people thought they were destined to lose. And despite, they lost Trollier, but they're totting it up. They're starting full forward line, contributed to the 3-6. So it's not all dead for Dublin in the inside forward line. But it's hard to make a case for them against Galway, who looked in the league like, the team to challenge Limerick this year.
I don't think it's that hard to make a case for them, really. Like, if this is probably the Dublin of maybe 4 or 5 years ago, they'd probably limp over Antrim with maybe a 4 or 5 point win. They were emphatic, 3-31. The two lines that really stood out for me, their full back line, their half back line, which were just emphatic. They got 17 points across their half forward line. They're building some nice pillars to the team. Liam Rush is slotted in centre-back. He's not going to move out there and will give them protection there. They will just need to adjust and get a midfielder to drop in and pick up whoever the centre-forward is for Galway. Their half-forward line, for the first time ever, are winning really a lot of primary possession, particularly Danny Sutcliffe, who can catch it left-hand, right-hand, any way you want it. He caught 5 clean puckouts the weekend. And as you allude to inside, they've shooters, they've scorers, they've an out ball in Ronan Hayes. So doing a lot of kind of things that are very underrated. And like I would like a lot about that Dublin team, like as I allude to, that full back line, because they are going to be tested with Conor Whelan, Brian Concannon, maybe a Joe Canning in there. That's just, they'll be well able to stand up to that test. They really will. It'll just be the other pieces around it. Who'll pick up Cottle Mannion, he can do a lot of work for him. And I would give Dublin, obviously I'm going to tip Galway because just how good they were in the league. But this Dublin team is no pushover. Galway will have to be really on form and have to bring a really strong performance to push this Dublin team all the way, because they're no rollover and they're well able to. We've seen shoot and take scores. 3-31, as I say, that's some scoring.
Okay. Is anybody back in Dublin to win this game before we move on to Munster? Exactly. No, giving him a good shout there now.
No. And I don't think, to be fair, I think it's probably just that little bit of a bridge too far for them to actually take out Galway. But I think what Jackie, the point Jackie makes is absolutely spot on. I think a couple of years ago, you might have seen Dublin struggle and start to limp, sort of, you know, maybe with 1 or 2 points unimpressive over an Antrim challenge that, like, obviously didn't fire on the day. But I thought there was a sort of a viciousness in their performance. They just came out, they brought a championship kind of mentality to it. And just like the game, I watched it, the game was competitive for the first 10 or 15 minutes, and then just Dublin just basically pushed on the gas. Danny Sutcliffe pulled the strings up front with Crummy. As Jackie said, they're very strong down the middle of their defence. That game will be competitive on Saturday, have no doubt about it. But Galway just to shade it.
Okay. Munster then Saturday evening, obviously we have the long-awaited proper meeting of Limerick and Cork, because I think, Damien, we are all dismissing their league match as a kind of sensical dress or halftime substitute Patrick Horgan. I think he's a good shout of starting this match, do you?
he did a good training session that night anyway, because he never stopped running up and down the sideline in that game. But that was a tough watch, lads. That was a night I really questioned the modern day hurling. And then I said to myself, catch yourself under. They're meeting again in a few weeks. This is not real stuff. Like, but look, the key thing will be Cork have obviously gone for goals this year. They hit 8 very early on. They're goal hungry. That kind of dried up a little bit near the end. I just wonder, have teams copped onto them a little bit? I wondered early doors with this possession game they played. It was an ultra possession game. And then I just, you know, for first few games they were being pinged for over carrying, and they settled on that and refined on it. Will they be able to cope with the ferocious intensity that Limerick throw at them, physical or otherwise, on the day? And if they can withstand that and play the ball around them, they're the fastest team in Ireland. They are so pacey, they are so fast, and you have to work to your strengths. And if they strike at all, they can ping fear in you. I just think Limerick will be right in their faces trying to stop them at source with that.
Yeah. Jackie, we are dismissing that game, but you're looking more, say, Cork against Waterford and kind of that forward division of, you know, Robbie O'Flynn, Seamus Hardy, Luke Mead, Jack O'Connor, Patrick Horgan, Shane Barrett. They've got speed and they're looking for goals. And we were discussing it here on the preview podcast last week. Not enough teams have tried to do that to Limerick yet, whether that's because they just simply cannot get the ball into a full forward line, or they can't afford to have a full forward line because they're too busy trying to flood the middle with Limerick. But teams haven't really gone for the jugular that much with Limerick, and it seems to be how Cork are going to approach it.
Yeah, the puck out strategy of Cork will be intriguing. If they go short as often as they did during the league, which they probably will, I think Limerick will just eat them alive. They'll let them have it in their full back line, and then when they start to bring it through the line, through their half back line into midfield, they could be at alive, because Limerick are ravenous in that. They'll size them up, they'll see what they're doing, they might get away with it once or twice, and then bang, they'll just get in their faces and turn them over. A couple of kind of things in it: how, what Cork get the ball and the quality of ball from the full back line into their shooters inside in the full forward line will be key, because there's no doubt about it, they have explosive forwards inside that we've alluded to already. The Cadigans, the Horgan, the Bart, a couple of lads that I really like. I really love this Alan Connolly lad. He's like an old style full forward.
He just needs to fill out a small bit though, Jackie. He's just a bit light.
But like, he's still only a chap, Rory.
Very, very young. Very young.
Very young. But there's a bit about him. Like, any lad that goes in on Paddy Marr, catches 2 balls and put him over the bar, you take notice of that kind of a guy, you know. Slight knowledge he is, and big in all his bodies, he's well able to cause him trouble. So he's well able to look after himself. I really like
a big impact, yeah.
I really like him and Shane Barrett. But
Shane Barrett,
one guy I think could be crucial to this, and there's no talk of him, I think Bill Cooper could be crucial. He hasn't played this year. I don't know if he is.
I think he will start. Yeah, he will.
If you look at their middle third, Luke Mead, Dar Fitzgibbon, beautiful stick men. But like, that isn't going to cut it with Limerick in midfield. You need a guy in there that's physical, that'll stand up to him, stand up to Will O'Donnell and these guys. So I would be big if Bill Cooper's ready to go. He has to play. So I think a lot could hinge on how they transition the ball from their puck out into those shooters inside in the full forward line. And Bill really important.
Jackie, they weren't going to give much away that night on the puck out anyway. Now, they've been struggling with the puck out a bit, but with Christy and Ger Cunningham in the background, you'd imagine they'll have that well sorted and well rehearsed for.
You'd imagine, of course. And why would they show their hand when they're meeting so late on? And maybe they over exaggerate the sharp puck out to pull Limerick into this. Maybe they'll put Harnedy 11 and put every long ball down on him, and they'll mix up maybe some short ones as well. That's the intriguing part. But if they do go short every time, think Limerick, yeah. Limerick are experts. That's just
they changed the keeper that night as well. Of course, his brother will be back in. Yeah. So,
yeah. Rory, we're talking about Cork. You know, sleight of hand here and showing us something misdirection. Limerick aren't going to try and surprise us in any way, shape, or form. Are they? They have their way of playing. It's been working fierce well for 3 years. We're not going to see a curveball from John Kiely, are we?
Well, he has been known to throw the odd one in the past. I think if we think back to, was it last year's Munster final? Did Cian Lynch go from midfield to centre forward?
Yeah.
But I think again that's the beauty of Limerick. Limerick have about 6 or 7 hurlers in that middle eight that are all very interchangeable and that could probably slot into different positions.
Yeah, Kyle Hayes to wing back. And,
you know, like they just have that adaptability that I think an awful lot of other counties envy. And I think you could absolutely see a curveball. Now, do I see it happening on Saturday? Probably not. I'd say they'll probably stick to their tried and trusted and just trust the fact that that would be good enough to take care of Cork. But the thing I'd say about Cork is this. Do I see Cork winning the All-Ireland this year? No. Do I see them potentially turning Limerick over on Saturday night? I give them a really, really good chance. I think there are 3 key things for me. The first thing is, I think Cork did what they usually do with the league, which is cat fart about the place and treat it with utter contempt. So I would read absolutely nothing into the league whatsoever. The second thing is they'll pour everything into the championship, which is traditionally the Cork way anyway, because they know, and Kieran Kingston knows, that they're not going to be judged on some meaningless league game against Galway or whoever in the earlier parts of the season. They'll be judged locally on how they get on the championship. The third and most important part is I do see the venue playing a small bit of a role. It's rare that Cork play Limerick in Thurles. I think you might have to go back maybe 10, 12 years, because obviously there's an agreement between the two counties. And I think Thurles will suit Cork. Now, the weather forecast is bad again on Saturday, which might slow things down. Again, that could favour Limerick, who knows. But I think there's a couple of things weighing in their advantage that could give them a chance. I think they're going to have to take all of those chances when they get them, particularly goal opportunities if they come. And if they do, I think they have a good chance. Do I think they'll win? You know, I give them a chance. I do. I really do give them a chance.
Okay. I don't. We're running out of time. So in a word, who's going to win this game? Jackie, we overran on the James Duggan love in here and we're running out of time.
Limerick for me, Mikey.
And you, Damien?
Yeah, I'll go Limerick too, Mikey, but only closely. Yeah,
he's wearing his Cork polo shirt. He's got the mindset in. We'll give him that. Okay.
Keep that quiet.
Final game of the weekend and quick enough. We have Tipperary, who Liam Sheedy has come out and defended his players. Jackie, they're not too slow. They're not too old. My question for you, though, is Liam Sheedy, as ruthless manager as he is, and like he's involved in high performance with Sport Ireland, doesn't every coach, manager in any sport, really, unless they're a robot, have some level of sentimentality and loyalty towards players? And Liam Sheedy has had 2 goals at being Tipperary manager and won 2 All-Irelands with basically the same crop of players 9-10 years apart. There has to be some level of affection there that perhaps is slowing down the revolution that people seem to think should be coming in Tip.
Yeah, of course there's a loyalty to those guys. He's had these guys minor, senior. They've been his lieutenants. They've rarely let him down. But I suppose at the end of the day, they're extremely talented players. Like Noel McGrath can make the ball sing. You're talking Seamus Canlan. You're talking Brendan Maher. These guys, multiple All-Ireland winners. Like they have 3 All-Ireland medals. You look at all the hurlers around the minute. Not too many of those have that. It's the balance of them getting the right blend with them and the kind of new guys that are coming in. You say age, like these guys are only 30 to 32. That's not that old. I know they're on the road, but these guys are looking after themselves. I wouldn't see that as a big concern. I would see more the lack of the new guys coming through. But I would expect maybe Paddy Cadell to maybe start the weekend. Brian O'Mara, I liked him a lot. I feel he would have featured for Tip this year, but unfortunately he went off injured in the league. But this team, I still feel there's a big kick in all these guys still. Jason Ford has been a massive plus for Tipperary, his form this year. So I like this Tipperary, but be forewarned with Clare. One thing that's dangerous is momentum, and they have momentum. They have Tony Kelly humming. They have Shane O'Donnell to come back. They have a lot of really good things. Like they're probably getting a free cut this weekend. Clare are real. They're extremely dangerous. And if Tipperary are not right at it, they'll be turned over.
Yeah. Damien, in your county, would there been a level of unease of what was seen last weekend between Clare and Waterford. I would think maybe in their hearts, Tipperary fans would have been expecting to be preparing for Waterford this weekend. Instead, they saw Waterford, who were maybe a little bit off the pace, but they got fairly monstered by a Clare team who, you know, in Tony Kelly have arguably the best, most informed, most influential hurler in the country at the moment.
And probably the greatest hurler Clare ever produced. It was a 4-point hammering, really. Mm. It's interesting, like, you know, you have the I've seen Sheedy with these guys, like, and they love him. They absolutely love him. And it goes back to when he took over back in 2008, I think, the winter of 2008. And they were doing the drudge work, the horrible kind of mucky, dirty running around pitches. And he was in the Hotel Manila gym in Clonmel, we'll say at 8:15. And he was over in Bursley with the North Tip crew at about 9 o'clock. And it was a dark night. The lads were running around the field, no lights. Then he saw a car on the bank flashing the lights, and it was Sheedy. And just like, it was fitness work at that stage. He had no business being there, but he's been with them that long. Even that night, he hit 3 training spots within the county on the same night. And I've seen him on All-Star trips, and, you know, I've seen various managers and various players, and there might be a distance, whatever. I know Sheedy has to make the calls and there's hard calls, but these lads just rowing together. They're like a big family. And I think the loyalty that they have will stand for a lot. If Jamie Callan can click this year, and if John McGrath can maybe get back to his best form, I think the Bubbles is ready to rock. He's ready to make up for lost time. He's as lean as I've ever seen. So, yeah, you have tried and trusted people. The young guys, there's a bit of frustration in Tip that the young guys haven't come through. Speaking from my own club's perspective, a frustration for me, because we had Keane Darcy, we had Jerry Cahill, we had, you know, Craig Morgan's ready to come through as well. And you know, they all haven't come through for various reasons. Now, they might just yet. But I would also feel that Paddy Cadell is a tried and trusted performer at all levels for Tipperary, and now he's going to get his shot at senior level, it seems. Brian McGrath will probably slot in there in the first 18 somewhere too. And Brian O'Mara probably would have been in there only for the injury. I'd personally love to see Craig Morgan coming in, but that could be club bias as well, but I think he's good enough. And I just feel that against Clare, if we can keep Tony Kelly quiet, if Tipperary can keep Tony Kelly quiet, I think you're gone a huge amount of the way towards winning that game. But keeping Tony Kelly quiet is not simple, and he could have to be double marked. And I think with Tipperary, they were only mediocre in the league, to be honest with you. They hurled in fits and starts, and they got some good results. There's a bit of fight left in that team yet. That's the one encouraging thing I will say.
Yeah. What would you suggest, Rory? An elephant tranquilizer, maybe? Or how would you endeavour to keep Tony Kelly quiet?
Well, it is going to be a man marking job, but that doesn't seem to bother him. I think he's been dealing with that now pretty much in his entire career. His ability to ghost into positions and be able to sniff out ball, even when he does seem to have somebody doing one on one with him, like, it's just he's that slippery. He's got that much mobility. He's got that much pace, and he's an extremely intelligent hurler. Now, the one thing for me for Clare is this is their first championship meeting. I think, Jackie, you were with us as well below in Cusick Park in the 2019 round robin, when I would suggest Tipperary embarrassed Clare right in front of their own in Cusick Park, like 321 to 17 points. It was a right hiding. They were banging in goals. Jamie Cahill was in flying form. Obviously, Tipperary went on to win the All-Ireland after that. So I'd say that stings a small bit still. They've obviously got a game under their belt. Jackie mentioned momentum. Yeah, this is going to be really interesting. Very hard one to call. We haven't really seen Tipperary as of yet. Like, you know, look, I suppose tradition would tell you that you'd have to give the nod to Tip. But a tough one to call now. A tough one to call.
I'm going to go with Clare. Jackie, in a word?
Tip.
Damien?
Tip.
Rory?
I'd have to go with Tipperary. I think they just have too much.
Yeah. I'm disgusted at this.
Having said all that,
I'm disgusted with this. Jackie, you're free to leave now. I'm going to get Eamon Fitzmaurice. I don't want to look at you anymore. See you later, Jackie.
See you, Jack.
Okay, we're back, and Jackie Tyrrell has been replaced by Eamon Fitzmaurice. Eamon, how are you?
Hi, Mikey. How's it going?
Very well, thank you. We spent the hurling show kind of previewing the games coming up this weekend, and I should probably do the same thing in football, but seeing as we have former Kerry manager here, and there's just one thing about the Kerry Kerry team, I suppose, that really stuck out to most people. It'd be good to get your view on it. I suppose that was the use of Sean O'Shea as an inside forward, swapping with the elder Clifford brother. Aidan O'Rourke suggested in his column on the RT website that this is probably maybe a little bit of misdirection to show the Dubs something that you don't plan on doing. But plenty of other people are saying this guy is just as good on the inside line as he is, and Paddy Clifford could do the job. We've been told that he was the heir apparent to Declan O'Sullivan, you know, the greatest 11 Kerry had seen for, you know, 10 years. But that was where he was bound to play. Are you a little bit confused by the weekend, or do you still see him as a centre forward?
No, I think in fairness to Kerry, that seems to be a feature of their play. Even during the league, there has been a bit of rotation going on. Shawnee played there during the league. He was in and out a bit during the league. Paddy Clifford's natural position is outside while he's wearing 15. You know, even during the league games as well, he played a bit deeper, and he's an excellent link player. Very good to put ball inside. I didn't find it that surprising that Shawnee plays inside a bit for his club. Sometimes he plays midfield, sometimes centre-forward, but when they need scores late in games, they've often put him in the inside line as well, where he does damage. So I think it's just adding a bit of a string to the bow. The beauty about him in there is that when they don't have the ball, he works very hard from 14, but he's not getting dragged as deep, and he's in quite an attacking position then, that when Kerry do win the ball back for a counter-attack, and even for his goal, he was the fella that had stayed up completely, and he was in position to receive the pass from Paddy Clifford from the turnover and convert. So I think it's an option. I think it's something that they'll use. I think it'll be horses for courses. I think in some games they'll need him at centre-forward and he'll play out there. And for some games then he'll be able to play inside as well. And the beauty of him playing inside as well is it takes a bit of the pressure off David inside as well. You know, it gives him another option inside there. And then you have the likes of Paul Gainey that's been playing outside as well and can play in there. So that's all good. It's good to have those options and to be able to rotate them in and out.
Yeah. Damien, they were impressive, Kerry, you would say, against a Clare team who, you know, gave Mayo a good challenge a couple of weeks earlier. You know, so they looking good, Nick, and that hunger we saw in the league is still apparent, obviously, as we go into the championship, which is no surprise.
I would say from a layman's level, the only question over Kerry is maybe their defence as they get into the last stages of the championship. I think
goalkeeper is still a bit ropey as well.
Well, yeah, like, I mean, I suppose going forward, Rory, they look like they have the measure of any team in Ireland. And what I loved about maybe the meeting with Dublin in the league was how they rallied back. And I actually thought psychologically that could have been an important result. But as Eamon was saying there, like, they have a work ethic, and their conditioning really has really impressed me. It just, you know, losing the defensive coach like Donny Buckley and maybe having a defensive issue, you know, I suppose it's up for them to work through that. But I think they have enough time to know what needs to be done. And they made life work of a very impressive Clare team that have been putting in solid, consistent performances for the last 6 or 7 years under Colm Collins.
Yeah. Rory, we were assuming we saw 1, 2, possibly 3 All-Ireland contenders or potential semi-finalists, etc., in Mayo and Donegal. We learned nothing from Mayo in what was, we don't want to turn this into a championship structure debate, which is the only way you could talk about that game. But I don't think Donegal answered a whole heap of questions either, did they, against Down? And obviously a lot hinges on Michael Murphy, really, doesn't it? His fitness.
Well, the big, I suppose, question for Declan Bonner is, did he really need to risk Michael Murphy and have him exacerbate what was obviously a reasonably serious hamstring problem? So especially, and I'm sure Eamon mentioned this earlier before, in terms of Derry, they have Derry in 2 weeks. It's live on RT, actually. It'll be live the second game on Sunday week, and I think Derry will give them their fill of it, and that's when you probably would have needed Michael Murphy, and for him to maybe, no, look at him, it mightn't be that serious, hopefully it isn't, and hopefully they can, you know, they'll have a clean bill of health going into it. But I think that would be a big worry. Having said that, they still made light work. Like, Murphy was gone within, I think it was the 25th or the 26th 12. So, yeah, you know, like they still made reasonably light work. They have a lot of strings to their bow. They still have Oran McNeilish to come back in there. They have the likes of, they have a really good half back line. McHugh was playing out of his skin. McBrearty, I think, was in fantastic form. Obviously, very one dimensional. That's the only thing. He's just got an unbelievable left foot. But what
it's a good dimension.
Yeah, it's a good dimension. So, you know, look, I just the big fear, and we're not going into championship structures and we're not getting into any of that, but the big fear for me for Donegal is if they were to get through Ulster, they'll be bait. I'd say they'll be absolutely bait by the time they meet Kerry in an All-Ireland semi-final, if they were to make it that far, because I think given the shotgun nature of this championship, to play four matches in 5 weeks or 6 weeks, to win all of those games in Gaelic football, modern era, not pick up injuries to some key players, and then to try and get to a semi-final where you're taking on a rampant Kerry. That would be a tough ask now.
Just saying, finally, on Donegal, just from a manager's perspective, like, we knew Michael Murphy had kind of some muscular issue, hamstring, we think it is. So obviously that was known. It was known he'd recovered well enough to play. They weren't going to play him if he was injured. You're in Declan Bonner's shoes. It must be very tempting, even in a game where you won't say it publicly, but you know you're probably 5-10 point favourites. The temptation to play your talisman, to lean on that man who's been the leader of the team for so long, it must be difficult to resist that urge. I'm not saying Declan Bonner should have done anything different. I'm just saying from us outside now, you know, Monday morning quarterbacking it does seem like a risk that wasn't worth taking.
Yeah, that's the way it's played out, Mikey. But I'd say two things. I think, first of all, you have to look at Declan Bonner and Donegal's mindset. The last time they played in the championship, they were beaten in a shock defeat in a game they were expected to win in the Ulster final. So no more than Kerry being beaten by Cork last year, they were going to be making sure they were winning that game, and they were playing their strongest 15 to make sure they beat down, particularly away from home in Newry. And I think the second point then is, look, Michael Murphy must have come through all the testing, all the protocols. You know, they would have built up his training gradually. He would have been doing one-on-one stuff. He would have been coming into some of the condition games. Then he would have been playing full football. And he was obviously good to go, because certainly for me, those decisions are black and white. You're either fit or you're not. And there's no halfway house anymore at that level. So it must have been just maybe some kind of a tweak that it wasn't 100% right. But look, whatever the backstory, it's a setback. It's a setback for Michael Murphy, and it's a setback for Donegal, because even psychologically for Michael Murphy now, this is the most enjoyable part of the season.
Yeah.
Those 2 week blocks, training, recover, get ready for the next game. You're top of your game. You're really enjoying it. And it's the time of year that you want to be training and on top of the ground. Whereas if you're rehabbing injuries, that's the least enjoyable part of any sports person's life. So that's frustrating for him. And I think you could see that afterwards. But it was a strange one. But I understand in a way why Declan Bonner did what he did as well, you know?
Yeah. We'll stick with Ulster. Damien, are you all right to stay with us, or do you need to hit the road?
No, I can give another five for sure. I have to hit the road anyway. Yeah.
Damien has a match this evening, folks, and he needs to hit the road. So, okay, Damien, we'll hit you with the big one. Then we'll stick with Ulster. Monaghan v Fermanagh. It's Monaghan. This might have been seen as a reasonably tight game by some people until Monaghan's Lazarus act to stay in Division One. But as we were saying here last week, don't read too much into that game, because Galway will never throw away a game like that again. So you'd still think Monaghan, given the forward line they're developing, they should have too much for Fermanagh.
Yeah, I think so too. Like, I mean, Jack McCarron has stepped up though again, and we're talking about Jack for maybe 3 or 4 years as well, but he really came good. But the game before that, Conor McCarthy had been taken off at halftime in a previous league game, but I think against Donegal, he cut Donegal apart on his own. And I just feel like they play with great pace and great speed going forward. He cut through Donegal on his own that day. And he was making the point afterwards like that, you know, they start to feel like that they have a point to prove this year themselves. I think they'll have too much for Fermanagh. I think Fermanagh are, they're still pretty much reliant on Quigley, who's possibly going to give it his last year up front. They're a very regimented set team. They have been for quite a while. I just think Monaghan will have too much for them. I don't know how tight that game will be. I suppose Fermanagh like to make a game of it, but yeah, I just think the pace of the Monaghan attack is going to be too much. And I think Monaghan, even behind the scenes, they're building a quite a nice academy, you know, with the minor team coming through as well. I would be surprised if Monaghan didn't win fairly comfortably, Mikey, to be honest.
Yeah, do we expect too much from Fermanagh, Rory? It's just we're kind of disappointed saying Monaghan should win. It's like they have, you know, the smallest pick in Ireland, basically. And, you know, but had a couple of good managers, like, you know, Rory Gallagher was expected to do a lot. It didn't really work out. And then they got Ricey in, granted his first job in inter-county management. But it's it just seemed to be a struggle for them, or they're relying on getting a once-in-a-generation player like Quigley or his brother. And when those guys go, you do kind of wonder. You know, they're so, like, in another province, they would probably be considered, you know, a reasonable contender most years, but they're really, you know, they're kind of treading water there, aren't they?
Yeah, I think, though, there are, again, mitigating factors behind it. I think, I mean, I'm not too sure. I remember doing a small bit of research when we had them live on TV not so long ago. I think if I was mistaken, I think they've only 20 clubs. Might even be less.
Yeah,
I mean, there are divisions in Cork that would have more clubs than there would be in the whole of Fermanagh. So if you take it from that, as a starting point, you'd have to say they nearly overachieve, as do Monaghan, by the way. I think Monaghan, I think have
certainly.
I think Monaghan have only 26 clubs in the whole county, and they are solid Division One year in, year out. So I think now look at obviously these counties are helped because it's only one code by and large. They're not having to deal with hurling. By and large, but I think I don't necessarily think we have an over expectation on what they can achieve. I think they find their level. I think they're regularly Division 2, Division 3. They kind of flitter up and down from there. And I think from that point of view, that's a pretty good level of success for the sort of pick of players that they have available to them. They've never won an Ulster Championship. It's probably going to get harder, I think, as the years go on, because I think those days, those kind of romantic days, possibly over now. The romance is kind of dead, even in amateur sport, to a large extent. But no, like I having said that, I still think that they should make the game competitive, but they won't beat Monaghan, and I can't see them beating Monaghan in Clonus.
No, we won't ask you to kind of repeat what's been said already, Eamon. But we might like. Do you see Monaghan as contenders in Ulster this year? Do you think? They were being excluded slightly from the conversation, I would say, until how they finish the league, which again comes with a bit of a caveat. But you know, they've still got an awful lot of quality players. A lot of them have a lot of miles on the clock, but there's a little injection of youth there, which can be the kind of the potent combination you want, can't it?
And a bit of momentum.
Yeah, that's the thing, Mikey. That there is the injection of youth, and there is. They've found a couple of more players, because I think all of us looking in from the outside would have seen, you know, that core group that have been outstanding for them for so long, that they have been getting a bit older. And, you know, we were all wondering maybe was this the end of that Monaghan team and that they'd start to fade away into the background. Damien made a good point there about their underage structures and the way that they're doing things up there. And as well as that, then that you're getting, you know, the Mulligans, these fellas, that you're getting them through and that they're delivering straight away. You still have the old war horses like the Darren Hughes to show those fellas the way. And a huge thing and a massive factor in the championship is having a goalkeeper with a kick out as good as Rory Beggins. Yeah. It's a massive factor. It's a great thing to have. You push up on him. He is such a boot in him that he can go all the way over the top and create a goal chance at the other side. He's very accurate. You know, he's coming out the field even more so this year. So they have plenty of good players. Absolutely, they're going to be in the conversation. I think if things go according to plan, this one, not according to plan, but as according to expected this weekend, Mikey, you'll have some battle between themselves and Armagh. In the semi-final at that stage. Yeah.
Great semi.
Huge game for both sides, because whoever wins it is into an Ulster Championship, having come through not as much of a battle maybe as the other side, and you're facing into an Ulster final in good stead, having won a good game, but at the same time, maybe with a bit in the tank, whereas whoever comes from the other side would have come through a tough battle. So, yeah, I think Monaghan will absolutely be in the conversation, but themselves and Armagh, that's a game I'd be really looking forward to.
Yeah. On that one then, Damien, we are kind of writing off Antrim here. You know, so we Ulster gets talked about as a bear pit, but there's either a provisional round game or a quarter final or two where we do think the result is beyond doubt. And you would think maybe we're all hyping Armagh up too much now with the three Kierans, etc. But yeah, we were mentioning them here last week. You can go from goalkeeper to full forward line, and there's something to like in every line of that team, and they're developing very nicely.
Yeah, definitely. And there looks to be, and I'll leave you going this point, Mikey, if you don't mind, but there looks to be a bit of a buzz back around Armagh again. And Eamon will know better than I will that Kieran Donnelly, I'm sure, has brought a lot of infectious enthusiasm into it as well. I've covered Armagh for the last 5 or 6 years, and some of the football they played over the last couple of seasons was electric. To be fair to McGeaney, he'd be quite stern as a manager, I'd say, quite intense, obviously. But he got a tune on that team. And you saw Jamie Clark going away again this year, and you said that's another distraction that they don't need. But, you know, they are looking, both themselves and Derry,
I think they kind of expect that now every second season, don't they?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so too.
The
shock has gone out of it. And I think, in fairness, both Armagh and Derry are now firmly in the conversation. The final thing I will say is, while the opponents on Sunday are a team that Armagh would expect to beat, I know from talking to people in Antrim, they've got a good solid manager. They have a team ready to commit. I know Paddy Cunningham got some Hollywood scores during the league, and everybody focused on Paddy. And I mean, Paddy's playing with Crohn's disease or a condition, and he probably is battling everything to play. But that shows how much he wants to play. And he's kind of cribbing that he's not getting more game time, which shows to me that the setup is good. And I know, again, from talking to people involved, you look what Antrim hurling the buzz is back. They have a really, really impressive county board in there at the moment, and they're devoting everything to looking after their county teams and their players. The structures are right. The supporters club is right. There is a bit of a buzz around Antrim as well. So I'm just saying, while Armagh will be favourites to win, they don't always respond well to that tag either. And Antrim could push them a lot closer than we think. But that's just my thoughts on that.
Just before we move off Ulster, though, one point I think, which I've always found an unusual one, is the home advantage situation that they afford from their provincial councils, based purely on the fact that it's the first team out of the hat gets home advantage. Now, to my mind, you know, I think that's a little, and the thing is, it's just unfair. If it's like, I mean, for instance, if you look at other provinces, like I don't understand, if it's a straight knockout championship, why the game isn't played at a neutral venue.
Neutral venue, yeah.
That makes no sense to me whatsoever. So Antrim now have to go down to the Athletic Grounds simply because Armagh's name was pulled out of a hat first. I mean, I don't know. And it's similarly for Monaghan against Fermanagh, where they have to go to Clona. So to my mind, you know, that's a really odd one, possibly a moot point, given that we're all hoping that this is the end of the provincial championships. But, you know, what's the old saying? The rumours of my death have been greatly exaggerated.
Thanks, guys.
See you later, Damien. Eamon.
See you guys. Thanks very much.
See ya. Eamon, it's interesting that the Kieran Donaghy factor, I suppose, in Armagh is interesting. There's a long tradition of great Kerry greats spreading the gospel nationwide, but not many have gone quite as far as Kieran here. It's quite a commitment he's making, and he seems, from hearing him talking about it, that like it's not kind of a part-time consultancy role. Like he's really bought into it. He's really committed.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And look, I think if you get involved in a role like that, Mikey, you're either in or you're out, and the players will see through it very fast if you're not 100% in. So that'd be Kieran's nature anyway. He'd want to be all in. I'd say he's really enjoying it. I've spoken to him a couple of times. You know, it like from his own perspective, obviously he's up there to contribute, and that's why Kieran McGeaney brought him in. But it's a huge opportunity for him as well. You know, prior to this, obviously he's worked with, you know, Kerry managers throughout his career and coaches and selectors, but it's seeing something different. And, you know, working with Kieran McGeaney, who's very experienced and who's seen a lot at this stage, I'm sure he's learning plenty. and learning things that we wouldn't have done in Kerry, and we would have done different ways, and opening his minds. You know, it's almost like when you see the likes of Ronan O'Gara going down to the Crusaders to learn his craft, or you see, you know, the soccer coaches when they're getting their badges, they do placements with the teams. I think Roy Keane, when he was doing his badges, I think he went down with the All Blacks for a while. And so it's fantastic for Kieran to be exposed to a completely different football culture. So it's good for him, but I'm sure it's good for our man. I'm sure he's bringing plenty to the table as well.
Potential future Kerry manager, Eamon?
Absolutely, Rory. Yeah, he has the attributes, and he's the personality, and he's a fantastic football intellect that maybe is a bit underestimated because he's so, you know, gregarious and outgoing and bubbly. You know, that it might be underestimated how tuned in he is, not alone to football, but all sports, and he brings things from different sports, and he's, yeah, absolutely. I could definitely see him in that role in the future.
You see, I was going to ask you that because to those of us on the outside of that Kerry team, or teams you could say he played on, his career spanned so long, he wouldn't have been one that would have jumped out, I think, to most people as, there's a guy who's going to be an inter-county manager. Between, you know, basketball being admittedly his first love, and the fact that, as you say, he seemed to enjoy himself so much. Obviously, to me, the guys who become managers are the guys who are more serious and like tend to be tend to be like concentrating and taking everything in. Maybe I'm doing him a disservice. He didn't seem to play that way. He seemed to be a little bit more off the cuff, a little bit more intuitive. But what you're saying is interesting, is that this doesn't surprise you.
No, the opposite. You know, he's like, let's say in the later years of my management, when the players would have access to all the video analysis in terms of the Huddle platform, and you know that they could look at the stuff there, but they could also put up analysis and draw annotations on it and so on and so forth. Kieran was always very much to the forefront of the player driven side of that, and always had excellent points to make. And he's very tactically aware. He's got, you know, because of his background in basketball, he's good basketball thoughts, but he watches all sports. He watches rugby, soccer, American football. He likes the American sports. So he brings a lot from different places. And he has a serious sport IQ. He'd be very tuned in. And then his personality, which is his big thing, he's a people person. So from a managing perspective, that's a fantastic mix, that, you know, someone who's a communicator, who understands people, but also understands the game. So, don't judge the book by the cover, Mikey, maybe.
No, I certainly shouldn't. I shouldn't ask people to do that when I look the way I do as well, and it's dangerous.
his book, which... I think was ghostwritten by Kieran Shannon, is a cracking read, by the way.
Yeah.
Highly
very
recommend.
Very open in it. Yeah.
Very open. It's fantastic. It's a brilliant read. Brilliant book.
Okay. Give it a go. We'll move on.
I'll send
on.
It out to you.
Do. Yeah. Courier it out there to me. All the way down here in the sticks. We'll move over to Connacht, and we've got Roscommon v Galway. Eamon, it's always an interesting fixture, I suppose, because one of Galway and Mayo get, you know, you could say the big two get stuck having to play, get to play this lot. So we were saying last week, Mayo look like they're going to saunter into a kind of final, and no disrespect to Leitrim, after what they did to Sligo, you'd actually be kind of scared what's coming down the tracks. Whereas Galway or Roscommon obviously have a slightly more difficult route here, even if it is just one game. Galway are flattering to deceive everybody at some point over the last few years. Since Port Joyce took over, he hasn't exactly had the easiest of baptisms in inter-county management, what with the pandemic and all that. But going to Dr. Hyde Park against the Roscommon team, who, calling a spade, they did a pretty disappointing league, didn't they?
They did. That rivalry is interesting, Mikey. I read Kevin Welch's book recently, and I suppose from being from Kerry and from the Munster side of things, when you think of Connacht, you always kind of automatically, maybe wrongly, think of Mayo and Galway. And the Roscommon-Galway rivalry kind of, in Kevin Welch's book, surprised me. And, you know, how wary he always was as a manager and as a player of the Roscommon threat, and particularly in the Hyde. So that's going to be a serious game. And interestingly enough, I think whoever comes through this game on Sunday, and it's going to be probably a very tight match, it could go to extra time and further, whoever comes through that, they're going to be really well ready for a Connacht final. In terms of the relegation from Division 1 for both teams this year, that's not actually a problem at all once they learn from it. It's next year when they're coming out of Division 2 again that the kind of hangover can be there. What they've learned from the tough games that they played, they were on the Kerry Dublin side, so they've had hard battles throughout this league. They will have learned a lot from it. That's going to really ready them for championship. Whoever comes through this game, it's going to be a serious battle again. They're coming into a kind of final ready. Whereas Mayo have been playing Division 2 teams all the way through the league. They're playing, is it two Division 4 teams?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you'd expect them to win those, obviously. And they're in a Connacht final.
And I know missing their talisman and key forward.
And now missing Killian O'Connor. So that the dynamic of the Connacht Championship is interesting. Whoever wins this game on Sunday is going to be in a very, very good position. And you know what you said about Padraig Joyce having had a baptism of fire in Roscommon's farm so far this year. It goes out the window for the weekend. It's a local derby. They'll have learned a lot from the league. Whoever wins this is going to be in a good shape going into a Connacht final. So they can flip their season upside down. The relegation can become completely irrelevant and they can win Connacht. Whoever comes out of this game on Sunday is going to be hard beaten.
Yeah. Rory, you look at their meeting in the league this year, which Galway won by 6 points, 216 to 113. It's just totting it up there. Roscommon scored 4 points from play, which either suggests the Galway defence is very ill-disciplined or Roscommon are struggling to create scoring chances.
I think, again, I suppose the one thing that I would be at pains to point out, and I'm sure, look, this might probably be speaking against myself in one sense, but I would have to dismiss an awful lot of what happened in the league. I think the leagues this year in hurling and football, I think they were utterly false. I think there's teams were effectively having to come back, hit the ground running in lots of ways, play, you know, strong teams from the get-go, very few lads getting chances and blooding in unless there was injuries. And they were picking up injuries. They were all trying to test different game plans. They knew that the big test would be championship, particularly in football where it's straight knockout and one day you're gone, which is an absolute joke, which in fairness, look, we won't get into today. So I'd be inclined to, I would anyway, personally, be inclined to dismiss a huge amount in relation to their league meeting. I'd probably, as Eamon said, I think the key thing is to go back and look at their championship meetings. I mean, you know, Roscommon, in 2019, the last time that we were allowing people in, like, and, you know, went to under Anthony Cunningham, go to Salt Hill, win an unbelievable Connacht Championship, having already accounted for Mayo. You know, I think he puts a steel into them that I think they will bring on the day. They play physical. Let's call it physical. They play a very physical game. They kind of, I think they have a sense they leave something in every tackle, you know, led chiefly by the Dailies, who I think are, you know, very committed players. And I think if Galway aren't tuned in, they will be turned over. But I do agree with Eamon as well. I think possibly Galway will have gotten a little bit more than what we've given them credit for out of that Monaghan game. And as Kevin said to us last week when we were here discussing them, that Galway were by and large the better side for 60, 65 minutes, but just seemed to blow it in the last five. So I suppose in a nutshell, this is again an impossible one to call. I could easily see extra time. And as Eamon already said earlier, maybe even more. Maybe, you know, we could be looking at our first penalty shootout. Who knows?
A team blowing it in the closing minutes and not being able to be separated next time and going to penalties. It sounds like you're predicting a France-style Euro 2020 for one of these two teams.
Looking forward to it now, though.
Yeah, call it for Sir Eamon. Who are you tipping?
generally I'm useless at calling, Mikey, but I've a feeling for Galway. I just think, like Rory said there, I think they actually played quite well above in Clonus in a tough away game against a good team. Paul Conroy getting the black card was silly, and they made a couple of poor decisions up front at the end where they could have killed the game. So yeah, I have a feeling Galway will have learned more from the league, and in a very tight game, but wouldn't shock me if Roscommon won either.
Yeah, I think they just have that little bit more of an attacking threat. I think, you know, and if Shane Walsh hits a bit of a vein of form, I think Galway, but only just.
Okay, I think Galway are going to win it by at least 4 points. I'm going all guts and glory here today. I'm not pussyfooting around. There's going to be no close games in my predictions. Okay, well, that brings us on to Leinster. So we might as well start. Jackie mentioned that thing you can't underestimate in hurling, which is the big, you know, the big bit of momentum. Wexford have that Eamon coming in now against the All Ireland champions, so it's going to be a difficult afternoon for Dublin down in Wexford Park. Yeah, tell me something I want to hear here.
sorry, Mikey. I don't know. Has there been a mass anointment in Wexford 1798? It's
dream is over.
It's going to be a tough day out for Wexford. The only thing you'd hope from a Wexford perspective is that they keep it competitive for a while. They stay in the game. They do the simple things well early in the game, which was something Clare didn't do in Killarney last weekend. They turned over easy ball early on, and it just got Kerry into the groove, and it was very hard to come back from that. So you'd be hoping Wexford will stay in the game. They'll battle gamely and everything else. But look, Dublin are going to be coming, and they're going to be coming hard. And, you know, besides, it's Leinster Championship. They'll be thinking about getting into the next round. But they have such competition in their squad as well. There's going to be a lot of fellas this week very disappointed in Dublin not to be on the 26. There's going to be fellas disappointed not to be on the 15. When they come in and they get their chances, they're going to be anxious to prove a point. The fellas that are starting outside the five or six certainties, they're going to want to nail their jersey down. So they have a lot of motivation outside of just winning the game and getting into the next round. So I think it'll be a big win for the Dubs, Mikey. But I hope that Wexford battle and stay in it for as long as they can.
Just while I have it there, Mikey, in my head, and I think it's just one small point that I'd like to make again on provincial councils and some of the strange decisions that get made from time to time. It is 4 Leinster quarterfinals on Sunday. All 4 thrown in, like 1:30, 3 o'clock, 3:30, and 4:30. More or less thrown in roughly around the same time. Now, to my mind, I don't know. Like, I mean, did the 4 of them have to go on at the same time? I know they're all on GA Go, and I'm sure GA Go will do really well, and that's all fine. But, like, you know, like, just spread them out a little bit more. Try and give everybody a little bit of oxygen. Like, these are all straight knockout championships. We're not going to see these teams ever again. Like, if they had moved 2 of the games to Saturday night, even at 7 o'clock. I know there's Leinster semi-finals in hurling the day before, but they were earlier in the day. You could have put 2 Leinster semi-finals on Saturday at 7 o'clock and just spread them out and try and increase the oxygen and the profile and the promotion around your marquee product as much as you possibly can. Just seemed to me like, you know, let's just bang them all in. Let's get them all done. Let's get it over and done with.
But with the open
wasted draw, opportunity.
Open draw for the semi-finals, maybe they felt it was the fairest way to do it. Eamon, we were here last week, and since we were here last week, we had Kieran Kilkenny telling us that Stephen Cluxton's return to the Dublin panel was imminent. But then after he played a league game for Parnells, we heard from Kieran Whelan on the Sunday game this weekend that he would be very doubtful that he'll play this weekend, and you know, doubtful still that he'll appear at any stage for Dublin in the Championship this year or ever again. If there's any team, I suppose, that can deal with this kind of level of doubt around a key position, you'd say it's Dublin, but it's never ideal to have so much uncertainty around like your talisman, is there?
No, look, it's a game changer if he's not playing, Mikey. It's as simple as that, and for two reasons. First of all, it's important to say Evan Comerford is an outstanding goalkeeper and, you know, a brilliant deputy, and there's no doubt about it. If he comes in, he'll do a good job for Dublin. but he's not Stephen Cluxton. And where this will tell is in an All-Ireland semi-final and an All-Ireland final. That's where Cluxton, you know, when the heat came on, when they were on the ropes, when they needed him to do the right thing, he always did. He always did. And whatever you threw at him, he'd find a way through it. And he was brilliant at thinking through things on the big day. Whereas, you know, a mere mortal, it would take them being beaten possibly, reviewing it and saying, okay, the next time they do that, I'm going to do this. But he was able to figure it out live on the day. So that's one thing, just the playing perspective. But the second thing is his leadership in the dressing room and how much he drives the standards of that Dublin group. And look, there are other fellas, the likes of James McCarthy, the likes of Fenton at this stage, the likes of Kilkenny, Johnny Cooper is another big leader for them. But Cluxton's the man. And if Cluxton's gone, it is some bit of a chink in their armour, for sure. So, yeah, I'm sure Desi Farrell will be anxious to have him back and to get him into the dressing room. So it is a one that will be interesting. Nearly any other player on their team, they'd absorb the loss. We've seen it as Dear McConnelly's moved on, Bernard Brogan has moved on, etc., etc. It's been absorbed, but Cluxton is different.
But could I ask you on that, though, Eamon? I think just as a manager, and I'm sure you might have had situations where you're trying to deal with stuff like this as well in the past, whereby I know, like, he's a special case, right? And in fairness, he probably maybe has done enough, built up enough credit in the bank to be afforded special privileges. But is there a potential for disgruntlement and rancor within the dressing room if somebody is persistently deciding, I'm going to take off the first 2 to 3 months of the year and I might swan back in then maybe on the eve of championship and just tog out? Now, I'm not saying that that's necessarily his mindset, but if you're number two or number three and you're trying to break into the team and you see this, I mean, how difficult is that to manage? Is there potential for something like that to spread? You know what it can be like in a dressing room if you know, one of the apples starts to go rotten, yeah. Like?
No, I think once it's a thing that's managed properly, Rory, I think it's fine. I think once everyone is very clear from the start, if a player, and I often did it because when I took over Kerry, some of the older lads...
You were dealing with a lot of older lads, Mark and they
had huge mileage in the clock and they'd give massive service. But at the same time, we knew that they were going to be very important to us come the summer. But when I would ask the lads, did they want a break or did I thought it was good for them to take a break or whatever, I'd be very clear to them that when they came back in, they needed to win their jersey back. It wasn't as if whichever one of them was going off and the jersey was just going to be hanging on the peg for them when they came back. When they came back, they had to earn it back. Similarly, you would say to whoever was deputising, listen, you have the jersey. It's up to you to hold on to it. Mm. If you hold on to it, and whatever experienced players coming back trying to get it off you, that's fantastic for the team because it's driving this, it's driving the standard higher. And it means that the competition is more realistic. Mm. And invariably, as the thing goes on, the experienced, better player will win his place back most of the time. But sometimes one of the young players that will come in will hold on to the jersey, and that's acceptable. And at the end of the day, I think, you know, if someone has their nose out a joint, fair enough. But players are realistic as well, Rory. They want the best players in that are available playing because that's the best chance of success. Ultimately, you want to win the All-Ireland. To win the All-Ireland, you need everyone. You need the best players. You can't do it without everyone. So players realise that and, you know, they accept it.
Yeah. Rory, the elsewhere in Leinster this weekend.
Some great games. There's some great games in Leinster this weekend. There really is.
Longford taking on Meath is quite interesting. You know, it would have been seen as a foregone conclusion a few weeks ago, probably, but Longford had a huge win in the league and then they had a massive win. Like, you know, they absolutely, you know, they were emphatic last weekend. So, you know, I was talking facetiously about momentum with my own county, God bless them. But here with Longford, you'd have to say they actually have a fighter's chance against Meath.
Big time, I think. And will Meath have a few suspensions? How many were sent off in that last game against Kildare? Was there two? Those suspensions will probably carry over into championship, I would imagine. And you have You might have one or two injuries as well from a Meath perspective, I think, that they picked up during the league as well. So, but again, home advantage for Meath will absolutely count for something. But at 100%, that's like, I mean, that is, that to me is the ideal game for a team like Longford, who love, they're kind of a specialist team when it comes to sort of one-off championship upsets. And that to me is
they're a knockout team.
Yeah, like, no, look, they won't progress probably beyond the semi-finals, but I guarantee you they'll be up for this. And that is there's a potential banana skin there now for me. Absolutely, yeah.
It's quite a performance they've put in over the course of the last few weeks, and because their season started with a 16-point drubbing from Derry, where they were, you know, they only scored 5 points in 70 minutes. So for them to be, you know, genuinely going off to face Meath now, in Navan with a chance, you know, it's shown a fair bit of fortitude, I suppose, isn't it?
It has, and I think in fairness, certainly in his public utterances, Pádraig Davies deserves a lot of credit with regard to that, Mikey. He was very steady, very calm. You know, the league, as you said, did not go well for them. It was, you know, they battled back and they got a result, but at the same time, it was a tough league for them, but he was very calm in all of his dealings with the press. I thought he came across well, and, you know, they got good reward last weekend now, and we'll have a cut-off meet. Now, I do expect a reaction from Meath. They will have been disappointed with their showing, you know, they both above in Castlebar and against Kildare. So you would imagine that they will be well up for it, and you would expect a big reaction from them. But it will be an interesting game for sure.
Yeah, but we're all actually after bigging up Longford, do we all think Meath are going to win? I'll admit I probably do, but I think it's just going to be that closer match than perhaps we were expecting.
No, it'll be competitive, yeah.
Yeah, the two sick men of the Midlands, Eamon, maybe being a little bit mean, but Laois and Westmeath, let's hope, as Rory said earlier, let's hope that the leagues are meaningless, because it's hard, particularly for Laois, to find too much meaning in the last month and a half.
Yeah, I would say for Mike Quirk is certainly looking at this as a huge game, Mikey, because, you know, it's been a disastrous season for them. And I'm sure there's mitigating factors, as there always is, especially for league. But, you know, if you go through the whole season without winning a match, regardless of the condensed nature of it, regardless of, you know, COVID and everything else coming into play, you're going to be very, very disappointed, because a lot of effort is going into it, and probably more complicated effort from the point of view that it's not just routine, let's get together, lads, or, you know, even trying to build a spirit when you've had defeats like that. It's challenging with COVID to try and do that. So it's a huge game for both teams. I think Westmeath showed sparks during the league. You know, they were very good below in Páirc Cliath that day against Cork.
They were the better side, Eamon, for most of that match. I felt like it was goals really that kept Cork in it. I thought Westmeath were
Cork's goals, yeah, were very good. And they played very well today against Mayo above Mullingar as well. So Westmeath probably brought a bit more out of the league than Laois did. Like I said, it's a huge game for Mike Quirk, and to see where he's going with this group, and to see can he wring a performance out of them now for the championship. And, you know, they have plenty of quality players, and they have plenty of forwards in particular that are capable of shooting the lights out. And Rory Burns, you know, in the relegation game was outstanding for Down. He made a couple of saves that, when things are going against you, that's what happens. So maybe the next day out now, they might get the bit of the rub of the green you need when things are going against you like that.
Yeah. One thing we know for sure is one of the teams is going to get their first win of the year. So that'll be, and one of them obviously will play there. One of them will go the season kind of winless, which is tough. The final game then, you could argue, is probably, Rory, the most intriguing of the three. Kildare against Offaly, an Offaly team who have definitely been battle tested after that. I was a corker of a match up until, you know, it turned into a bit of a blowout, which Louth definitely didn't deserve, because it had a bit of everything that game. But it's what we've been saying about Offaly throughout the league. They're able to, they're not a huge squad, but they have say 17 players or 18 players are able to, there's an impact coming off the bench for Offaly, which is absolutely crucial in the game today.
Yeah, but if Kildare and Meath, they're the two sides that you are praying and hoping, if the Leinster Championship remains as is, we don't know if that's going to be the case, but there's certainly two of the counties that you'd be praying and hoping that we'll actually be able to get up to that level and eventually be able to compete with Dublin. And if they're going to have any ambition to do that, Kildare really need to be doing the business on Sunday against Offaly. Now, when expectancy has been kind of put on their shoulders, they have shown in the past to be a wee bit flaky from time to time. So that the big thing from their point of view, I suppose, is they've got promotion up to Division 1. I think that, and as much as I said earlier on about the league not meaning much, I think that will give them a little bit of momentum. I think in fairness, they might finally have most of their best players on the field. And I just think in terms of the class that they have up front, athleticism that they have all around the field, some of the ball-winning abilities, particularly at midfield. And definitely, as Eamon mentioned earlier, they without a doubt, the better of the two goalkeepers. I would expect Kildare to win and actually win this comfortably enough. Now, that might be a bit risky, given how much we've seen Offaly sort of pull it out of the fire over the last couple of weeks. But I just think that freshness that Kildare will have going in on Sunday, and I'd expect a big performance and hopefully a bit of a statement. Because, look, the reality is they could be playing Dublin the following week or the week after that. So I think we're going to need to see a big statement from Kildare and an endorsement of the Jack O'Connor project, I suppose. And hopefully we will.
Yeah, that's an interesting point there, I suppose, Eamon, that the Jack O'Connor project. We had Daniel Flynn is quoted on the RT website today, kind of, you know, celebrating kind of the Jack O'Connor approach, which is, you probably appreciate it. It's not that you don't pay any attention to the defensive side of the game. It's just that when you do go attacking, you really, you do your living best to make it count. Can you see Jack O'Connor's fingerprints on this team now after a few seasons?
I can, and in fairness to him, again, you know, no more than Mike Quirk, no more than all the managers trying to make an impression on a new group in particular.
COVID.
In COVID, it is quite hard and it is difficult, challenging. Yeah. But I saw those quotes, from Daniel Flynn. And one thing he said was that he said that Jack is a deep thinker about football. And he is. My God, like when he's in the zone, and particularly when he's in championship mode, he doesn't think about much else. So... he absolutely will get a lot out of that Kildare group. He is conscious of minding the house as well, and you know, I think we saw that during the league. I think they were probably disappointed with the way that they conceded the goals in the second half against Meath in the Leinster Championship last year, and there definitely was an element of tightening up at the back, but they seem to have a good balance now. And you know, Jack's experience and his passion is only good for Kildare. So you know, exactly as Rory said there, you'd be expecting them to win, and you'd be expecting them to win well. That if they're hoping to challenge the likes of the Dubs, if they get a cut off them, they're going to have to be beating the likes of Offaly playing well.
Yeah, so we're saying Kildare, Meath, Westmeath, and a toss-up between Dublin and Wexford as to who goes into the open draw in Leinster, which is a bit of a novelty. I know, it's interesting, Roy. There is an air of mystery as to what way the last four forms up, even if there's zero air of mystery as to who's going to win the championship at the end.
One thing that's going to be very interesting is I hope the broadband framework for GAA Go is well proofed, because I would imagine they'll probably hit record subscriptions this weekend, given it's the only place to watch Dublin, given the size of the following that they have. I had my own father-in-law, who's an avid Dub supporter, ringing me on the way back up from Thurles last Saturday or last Sunday saying, where can I watch the match? Where can I watch the match? And I was explaining to him. So I would imagine, given the fact that it is on GA Go, you're going to have quite a bit of interest, I hope. I hope there's no crashes or just for their sake.
One of my best friends, his parents live directly behind the goal at the town end of Wexford Park. They should put up a scaffold and charge thousands. They'd make the money back on the scaffold. Yeah. You could give them a good name, number for a scaffold.
And the reality is, I mean, look, they're not going to, like, they'll probably beat Wexford pulling up. You know, you would expect that, but there'll still be an interest to see, well, what's the starting 15? How are they shaping up? What way are they thinking long term here? Who, you know, like, they've, as I said, they kind of, they did a certain amount of experimentation themselves throughout the league. Fenton drifting into half forward at one point against Kerry and different things like that. They've had Tom Lahiff and a couple of other players try and break their way into the team, Paderburn, those guys. So look, there's still going to be curiosity around Dublin in terms of team selection, the way they're playing, Cluxton. Regardless of the result, you know, they're still the team to watch. They're still the team to beat. And there will still be a huge, huge interest and huge focus on that 70 minutes come 3:30 on Sunday.
Yeah, well, we're looking forward to it. We're looking forward to all the games, of course. You can listen to them on Saturday and Sunday Sport on RTÉ Radio 1. You get that match in Connacht and the Munster hurling match on Sunday live on RTÉ 2, and then you have Sunday game highlights. Just a reminder of our podcast. There's a handsome young man presenting the Euro 2020 podcast this morning. I think Mikey Stafford is his name, with Karen Duggan reflecting on the last 16 madness. And there's the Monday RTÉ soccer podcast. And We Become Heroes is back. Marie Crowe has a good one to start off. Getting inside the mind of Padraig Harrington, which is, as we know, an interesting place to be. So that's there as well. So I just say thank you to Eamon and to Rory and to Damien and Jackie earlier. And we hope you all enjoy the games of the weekend. And we'll catch you next week.
Crucial from this. How much longer will the referee allow? Dublin lead by a point. And there's the whistle. It's over.
We earned it by winning the last two matches on the road. And that's not going to be taken away from us.
But what I love in hurling, I love players that never give in.
He hits it. It's over the bar.